Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, Entertainment Weekly, followed by USA Today at 2.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Legal Aid of Northwest Texas has scheduled virtual clinics from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. on the first Tuesday of each month through October 5th. Clinics will include topics in bankruptcy, name change, child support, custody, divorce, employment issues, foreclosure, probate, landlord-tenant, wills, estate planning, occupational essential needs, license, and expunction. Legal Aid of Northwest Texas is a nonprofit organization that provides free civil legal help to low-income residents in 114 Texas counties throughout North and West Texas. With offices in Abilene, Lubbock, Midland, Odessa, San Angelo. To apply or for more information, call Jeannie Sith at 432-686-0647, extension 5503.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 80 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the mid-60s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the upper 70s. Tomorrow night, clear with a low in the low 60s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 1 p.m.
This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Mind's Eye.
Hello, this is Betsy, and I'll be reading Entertainment Weekly this week. The following articles are from their website, EW.com. Prince William and Kate Middleton honor devoted Prince Philip after his funeral. Shortly after the late royal's funeral service on Saturday, William, 38, and Kate, 39, shared a short message on social media about the loss of their beloved family member. Posted to the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge's official Twitter account, the message praised the Duke of Edinburgh and his relationship with Queen Elizabeth. The Duke of Edinburgh was a devoted consort to Her Majesty the Queen for nearly 70 years, from Her Majesty's ascension in 1952 until his death, the message read. Alongside the post were two photographs, a shot of the couple standing behind Philip's coffin, as well as another image showing William, brother, Prince Harry, and other family members following Philip's casket into St. George's Chapel in Windsor Castle. The official account for the Queen and her family shared another tribute. In loving memory of His Royal Highness, the Prince Philip, Duke of Edinburgh, they wrote, alongside a photo of the late royal tipping his hat. Earlier this month, after Philip's death, at the age of 99, on April the 9th, the royal family showed their respect when all three of the official royal Twitter and Instagram pages changed their icons. Philip's grandson and granddaughter-in-law swapped out the smiling photo with their three children from last year when they all participated in the Clap for Carriers campaign near the start of the coronavirus 19 pandemic outside their Omner Hall country home. In its place now is William and Kate's joint monogram. They also changed their cover photo on Twitter to a black and white photo of the Duke of Edinburgh. In the days before the funeral, the royal family shared several never-before photos that showed Philip spending time with his family, many of which that were taken by Kate, alongside one portrait of son Prince George sitting with Philip in a carriage, which Kate took in 2015. William shared a touching tribute, noting that Philip and Kate shared a special connection. I feel lucky to have just had his example to guide me, but his enduring presence well into my own adult life both through good times and the hardest days, he wrote, adding, I will always be grateful that my wife, Kate, had so many years to get to know my grandfather and for the kindness he showed her. This story originally appeared on People.com. Dominic Purcell is making DC's Legend of Tomorrow his yesterday. The actor announced he's leaving the CW superhero series in a post that he said on Friday night. Deal isn't done, but I really have no interest, he wrote. Whatever cash they throw on my corporate level, I'm walking away from Legends of Tomorrow. Purcell later revised the post to clarify he's leaving the show but will come back periodically, adding, it's a handshake deal with Legends. Phil Klemmer. I don't have a beef with the studio or anything. He added that the previous version of the post was a joke. Purcell has played Mick Rory, also known as Heatwave, on all 5 seasons of Legends of Tomorrow, reprising the role he previously played on The Flash. It's been a total pleasure and a humbling experience bringing back Mick Rory to life, the actor wrote on his original post. I smashed this character. Not an actor in the world could have done better. Time to move on and to see what unfolds, he continued. Big thanks to cast and crew and all the awesome relationships I've made over the years. Thank you all. Representatives for Purcell did not immediately respond to EW's request for comment. The CW and Warner Brothers declined to comment. Purcell will appear on Season 6 of Legends of Tomorrow, which is set to premiere on Sunday, May the 2nd. The series has been renewed for a 7th season. Warner Brothers and the CW would not comment on whether the actor will return for Season 7. Purcell previously said in a post that he would be leaving at the end of the 7th season, as his contract would be expiring. The post has since been deleted. Kate Winslet is mayor of Easttown in HBO's new murder mystery. Also, John Stamos takes the court in Disney's sports drama Big Shot, and Keith Urban and Mickey Guyton host the 56th ACM Awards on CBS. Let's take a listen to find out more. Friday, Big Shot. How, when, and where to watch. It is streaming on Disney. Series debut. It's time to travel on over to Disney for the new series centering on Marvin Korn, played by John Stamos. He is an outstanding college basketball coach who's given a shot at redemption with a girls' team at a very elite private high school. He quickly realizes that it requires more attention and care than his previous team, dribbling around different personalities and less than stellar work ethics. But when he is back with the Lakers, Coach Korn starts to grow alongside his new team, netting some major points of his own along the way. What else to watch is streaming. Let's see, there's Frank of Ireland on Amazon Prime Video, Tiny Word on Apple TV, Earth at Night in Color season premiere, Apple TV, Mythic Quest, Apple TV, and Earth Moods on Disney. The Falcon and the Winter Soldier is also on Disney. Well, let's take a listen to some of the movies. The Year Earth Changed, Apple TV. Arlo the Alligator Boy on Netflix. Monday, a digital VOD. The Rookies, digital VOD. Jacob's Wife, digital VOD. And Reefa, digital VOD. At 8 p.m. is Shark Tank, ABC. McQuire, CBS. Mark of a Serial Killer, Serial Killer Week episode, Oxygen. and RuPaul's Drag Race VHI. At 9 p.m. is 2020 ABC, Magnum PI CBS, and Dateline NBC. 10 p.m. is Blue Buds CBS, OWN Spotlight, Viola Davis OWN, and Van Hensley final season premiere, Stifey. On Saturday, streaming is Ghost Brothers Lights Out series debut, Disney. 9:30, Nightly News Kids Edition, NBC. 7 p.m., Murders at the Bordering House, Serial Killer Week Special, Part 1, Oxygen. 8 p.m., One Wild Day Special, BBC America. Envy, a 7 Deadly Sin Stories movie on Lifetime. And 8:30 p.m., Accident, Suicide or Murder, season premiere, Serial Killer Week, Oxygen. And at 9 p.m. is right in front of me, Hallmark. That movie will be refreshing to see after all the others. Now, on Sunday is the 56th ACM Awards. How, when, and where to watch. It is at 8 p.m. on CBS on Sunday, just 7 months after the previous coronavirus-delayed ceremony, the 56th Academy of Country Music Awards will honor the best country tunes and artists of the past year, including Keith Urban. Mickey Guyton will host the ceremony, which will feature performances by Blake Shelton, Jimmy Allen, Cassia Beltrino, and Little Big Town, among others as well. Should be fun. And we will see John Legend. Mayor of Easttown. How, when, and where to watch. 10 p.m. on HBO. This is a series debut. Kate Winslet stars in the next murder mystery from HBO. This one is set in a small Pennsylvania town when a young girl turns up murdered. Marie Winslet feels the pressure of her community as she tries to solve the case while also grappling with some serious personal trauma. Let's see what else there is to watch. At 6 p.m. is Snap. Serial Killer Week episode, Oxygen. 7 p.m. Roll Up Your Sleeve Special, NBC. Murders at the Boarding House, Serial Killer Week Special, Part 2, Oxygen. 8 p.m. American Idol, ABC. The Real Housewives of Atlanta, Bravo. Batwoman, The CW. Tournament of Champions 2, Season Finale, Food Network Discovery, The Symptoms, Fox, The Gloaming, Stars. 8:30 p.m., The Great North, Fox, Mastermind of Murder, Series Debut, Serial Killer Week, Oxygen. At 9 p.m. is Fear the Walking Dead, AMC, Charmed, The CW, Godfather of Harlem, Season Premiere on Epic, Bob's Burger on Fox, The Nevers on HBO, Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist on NBC, City on a Hill, new time slot, Showtime, and Confronting a Serial Killer on Stars. At 10 p.m. is The Rookie, ABC, Good Girls, NBC, they are back. Couples Therapy, back-to-back episode, season premiere, Showtime. We know TV has a lot to offer, be it network, cable, premium channels, or streaming platforms, including Netflix, Disney, Hulu, HBO Max, Amazon Prime Video, Apple TV, and others. So EW is here to help, guiding you every single day to the things that should be on your radar. Be sure to listen. Subscribe to our What to Watch podcast on Apple's Podcasts, Spotify, Player FM, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcast, or via your own voice control smart speaker, Alexa, and Google Home. We hope this was helpful for your watching of the shows. Damian Lewis is paying tribute to his late wife, Helen McCroyer, who died this week of cancer at the age of 52. The Billion Star 50 honored McCrory, who was best known for her roles in Harry Potter's films and Polly Gray in Peaky Blinders, in an emotional tribute written for the Sunday Times, in which he reflected on his brilliant wife's life. Many people have spoken about her, and many more will, so that's where I leave it, because it strikes me that two things are happening this weekend: an outpouring of grief and shock, and a celebration of my Helen, the actress, from fans everywhere, and the Helen, the person that I know, Lewis said of the actress, and that's who I want to talk about. Helen was an even more brilliant person than she was an actress, the actor continued. She was a people person. I'm more interested in who I'm with than who I am, she would say. And I wanted to share that. But she also lived by the principle of kindness and generosity, that you put these things out into the world to make it better, to make people feel better. Lewis went on to speak on how she always spread happiness when she was writing, even when dying in her last days. When talking to our wonderful caregiver, she repeatedly said, "Thank you so much for everything that you were doing. I've never known anyone able to enjoy life as much as Lewis did. Her ability to be in the present and enjoy the moment was absolutely inspirational." Nor was she interested in navel gazing, no real interest in self-reflection. She believed in looking out, not in, which is why she was able to turn her light so brightly onto others. Lewis, who married McCrory in 2007 after they met at a production of The Five Gold Rings at London's Amelia Theatre in 2003, said the late actress has left her two children, daughter Manon, 14, and son Gulliver, 13, too early, but they have been prepared for life. They have in them the fearlessness, the wit, the curiosity, and the talent and beauty of their own mother. She has been courageous and not afraid, Lewis said. He also wrote in his tribute that she has been utterly heroic in her illness. Funny, of course, generous, brave, uncomplaining, constantly reminding us of how lucky we have been, how blessed we are. Her generosity has extended to encouraging us three to live. Live fully, take opportunities, have adventures. She will always be missed. I will never, ever forget her. She has been honored on social media since the news of her death by co-stars and friends, including Daniel Radcliffe, Helen Mirren, Jason Isaacs, J.K. Rowling, Tom Felton, and Cecilia Murphy. This story originally appeared on People.com. Hillary Clinton is adding to her literary resume. The politician has authored numerous books, everything from the 2017 retelling of her most recent presidential run for the Book of Gutsy Women, a children's book she wrote with her daughter, Chelsea Clinton. But this time she's tackling fiction alongside her longtime friend and best-selling author Louise Penny. State of Terror will hit shelves on October 12th, but EW is giving you now a first look at the cover right here. It is in black, and in yellow it says Hillary Rodham Clinton, State of Terror, Louise Penny. And there is a diamond with a flag on it in the center of the book. The book will be published jointly by Simon and Schuster and St. Martin's Press, which draws on Clinton's intimate knowledge of the high-stakes world of foreign policy and Penny's narrative crafting expertise. It follows a Secretary of State who has recently joined the administration of her former political rival. Sound familiar? A series of terror attacks threatening the very tenuous global order, and the Secretary of State finds herself in charge of pulling together a task force and attempting to stop the conspiracy in its tracks. Basically, the co-authors wrote what would have then been Secretary Clinton's most stressful day on the job. What an incredible experience to get inside the State Department, Penny said in a statement. Inside the White House, inside the mind of the Secretary of State, this high-stake crisis explodes. Before we started, we talked about the time as Secretary of State. What was her worst nightmare? State of Terror is the answer. You can pre-order your copy of this thriller now and stay tuned to EW for more on the book as the publications near. Should be terrific. We'll look forward to reading that. We now have a date for April Koepner's return to Grey's Anatomy. Sarah Drew is the latest in a long line of actors who has returned to the medical drama this season after some time taken away. Patrick Dempsey, T.R. Knight, Kryler Lee, and Eric Dane have all appeared in season 17. But unlike many of the others that came before her, April seems to be returning to the real world and not Meredith, Ellen Pompey's beach setting. Drew, who first appeared on the show in season 6, left at the end of season 14. And although we still don't know much about her guest appearance, the actress has revealed that her episode will air on Thursday, May the 6th. And based on the photo she tweeted, it's safe to say that April will spend some time with Jackson Jesse Wilson as the father of her child. We will look forward to seeing that. The show Younger is all grown up now. The final season of Darren Star's comedy is here. And just because Liza's little lie about her age is finally fully out in the open, that doesn't mean the drama has aged out. As the show nears its conclusion, EW gathered the cast and the creator for a round-the-table video series to dish about their first impressions of the show, who stole what from the set, and what to expect from the last 12 episodes. I remember getting the script, and immediately I was like, oh, Darren Star. Recall star Sutton Foster, who adds that she didn't even sit down as she raced through the pages. I just remember thinking, I think I might be able to pull this off. Then I was determined. I never wanted a job more, but never in a million years would I have imagined that it would have been 7 years. It's wild. Nico Tortellio, who plays Liza's on off again, love interest Josh, remembers being excited to play a part where he didn't have to conceal all his tattoos. And he adds that working on the show felt like summer camp every year as the cast became so close and so friendly. And now we're too old to go to summer camp, he jokes. Luckily, Molly Bernard, who plays fabulously fierce, pansexual publicist Lauren has a backup plan, but maybe we can be camp counselors. As for the secret of the show's longevity, Peter Herman, who plays Liza's current boyfriend and boss, Charles Brooks, believes it's the overwhelmingly positive tone that keeps it on the air for 7 seasons. This show is so fundamentally optimistic and so unbanishedly positive that despite from the way we spend our days, he says, there's something very winning about that show. It's not a show that's naive in any way. It's not a show that pulls any punches. It's plenty sarcastic. It's got all the bite that you want, but it's a show that's optimistic also about human beings and the friendships between them. A warm feeling inside isn't all Herman walked away from with Younger. He says, when asked if he managed to sneak home with any of the Charles custom three-piece suits, I actually did get to take a number of them home, and I slept in them, and then I'd wake up the next day and put on the next one and wear three of them a day. When it comes to season 7, though, he says, look out for some baby surprises as Josh continues to navigate fatherhood, and the cast jokes that it would be a collaborative effort to constantly conceal Hilary Duff's real-life pregnancy. Duff's playbook editor, Kelsey, but in the end of the day, it's those group moments that Foster that we'll miss most of all in the show. It's all the stuff behind the scenes that I'll miss, she says. I'll miss just hanging out, showing each other photos and laughing, crochet club. We just had such great times, and we were together for long-ass days, and we worked together for 7 years of our lives and shared this time together, and that's what I'll miss. The first 4 episodes of Younger Season 7 are available now on Paramount and Hulu. The final 8 episodes will be released weekly on Thursdays. We will look forward to watching the show. Felix Sela, the original Cousin It on The Addams Family, dies at the age of 44. Felix Sela, the actor best known as Cousin It on the 1960s TV show The Addams Family, has died. He was 84 years old. Sela's friend and farmer Buck Rogers and the 25th century co-star Gil Garrett reported on Twitter that Sela died Friday after a battle with pancreatic cancer. Coming in just under 4 feet tall and only 70 pounds, Sela was the perfect choice for the mumbling Cousin It on The Addams Family. For years, audience didn't see his face. The character covered in a full-length hairpiece, sporting sunglasses and a hat. Cousin It was originally to The Addams Family, which ran from 1964 to 1966 on ABC. Based on Charles Addams' cartoons, the show featured a creepy and crawly family with a flair for macabre. But Sela's character was the invention of a producer, and he first appeared on the 20th episode in 1965 when a zookeeper mistakes Cousin It for an exotic animal. Sela did not provide the distinct mumbling voice of Cousin It. That was added by the sound engineer Tody Magro in production. Cousin It appeared in 19 episodes of the original TV show, with Sela playing the character 17 times. He was born January 11, 1937 in Italy. His first when he came to the United States in 1955 and began his career touring with the Ringley Brothers and the Barnum Bailey Circus for 7 years. He worked as a trapeze artist, tumbler, and bareback horse rider. Eventually, he settled into Hollywood in 1962, where he became a stuntman. He went on to work in movies like A Ticklish Fair, TV shows like Bonanza, and appeared in the first pilot of Star Trek, The Cage. His small stature often helped him find work, including the cousin that he was in The Addams Family, NBC series Buck Rogers in the 25th Century, and even as a hang glider in Star Wars Return of the Jedi. Sela's other notable roles included a villain facing off against Sam Spade Jr. in The Black Bird, and on projects such as Point Blank, The Kentucky Fried Movie, The Brood, Spaceballs, H.R. Punsnuff, and Lidsville. He also excelled as a stand-in, double, and stuntman, working on projects such as Planet of the Apes, Demon Seed, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, The Towering Inferno, and The Hindenburg. And he was also in E.T., The Golden Child, Howard the Duck, and Batman Returns. After moving to Las Vegas in 2003, he became a regular at fan conventions. He is survived by his wife, Sue, and his children, Bonnie and Michael. We will all remember what he gave to the TV industry. May he always rest in peace. Scott Rudin, the Oscar and Tony-winning producer whose credits include The Social Network, The Book of Mormon, and Aaron Sorkin's To Kill a Mockingbird, will step back from his Broadway productions amid allegations of abusive behavior, Rudin announced Saturday. In a statement to The Washington Post, Rudin added that he is taking steps that I should have taken years ago to address this behavior. This announcement comes in the wake of a story published April 7th in The Hollywood Reporter detailing numerous allegations from Rudin's former staffers of mistreating spanning decades. They described alleged instances in which the producer smashed a computer monitored on an assistant's hand, sending him to the emergency room, throwing a stapler and other items at employees, and lighting to disrupt former staffers' careers. He threw a laptop at the window in the conference room and then went into the kitchen, and we could hear him beating on the napkin dispenser, one source told THR. Then another time he threw a glass bowl at a colleague. It's hard to say if he threw it in the general direction or specifically at the colleague himself, but the HR left an ambulance due to a panic attack. That was the environment. These allegations and the tone in which they were presented represent the cultural shift currently underway in the entertainment industry. Rudin's fits of rage and treatment of employees have been reported on for decades. A 1998 story in Fortune magazine described him as notoriously unpleasant and famous for his habit of throwing phones, verbally abusing staffers, and expecting 16-hour workdays and 7-day work weeks. A 2010 THR profile of Rudin ran under the headlines, "The Most Feared Man in Town." Despite this, Rudin has remained one of the most powerful figures in the Broadway community and one of the most prestigious producers in Hollywood. He has several stage projects currently in the works, including the upcoming revival of The Music Man starring Hugh Jack and Sutton Forrest. His recent film credits include acclaim like Uncut Gems and Lady Bird. The Post also reported that Rudin was instrumental in securing financial aid for New York's art venues from Washington. Few prominent figures in the entertainment business have spoken publicly about Rudin since THR's story was published. On Wednesday, though, Tony-winning actress Karen Olivia announced that she would not return to Broadway's production of Moulin Rouge, in which Rudin is not involved, because the industry's silence about Rudin was unacceptable. Building a better industry is more important than putting money in my pockets, she said in an emotional video. He is a monster. That should be no brainer. Producer Megan Ellison was also criticized Rudin in a Twitter. Their piece barely scratches the surface of Scott Rudin's abusive, racist, and sexist behavior, similar to Harvey Weinstein. Too many are afraid to speak out. I support and applaud those who did. There's good reason to be afraid because he is vindictive and he has no qualms about lying. I am so sad to hear this, but I praise what is being done. Since then, reports have emerged about Scott Rudin. We have many private conversations with our sibling unions and Broadway League. Equity President Kate Schindel and Executive Director Mary McColl said in a statement, "We have heard from hundreds of members that these allegations are inexcusable, and everyone deserves a safe workplace, whether they are union or not. Thank you for following this story. This is an important step in creating truly safe and harassment-free theatrical workplaces on Broadway and beyond. It is not the end of our work to ensure a workplace safe for everyone in the industry as we work towards reopening. Thank you for listening to this story." Prince Harry and Prince William reunited for the first time in more than a year at the funeral of their grandfather, Prince Philip, on Saturday. The brothers joined other members of the royal family, including their father, Prince Charles, in walking behind the Duke of Edinburgh's coffin during the procession to St. George's Chapel at Windsor Castle. Instead of being positioned next to each other, their cousin Peter Phillips, the son of Princess Anne, walked between them. The procession order was a practical change rather than sending a signal to Buckingham Palace, someone wrote. "This is a funeral, and we're not going to draw attention to the perceptions of drama. The arrangements have been agreed and represent Her Majesty's wishes." Last Sunday, Harry returned to the UK from California for the very first time in over a year to attend his grandfather's funeral. Meghan Markle, who is expecting the couple's second child, a baby girl, did not, as we know, accompany her husband. She has been advised by her physician not to travel, a royal spokesman said. In the wake of Meghan and Harry's interview with Oprah Winfrey last month, there are ongoing tensions with the family. Gail King, who is friends with Oprah and the Duchess of Sussex, revealed that Harry spoke with William and Charles last month. "The word I was given was that those conversations were not productive, but they're glad that they have at least started a conversation," she said. "Ironically, it's probably how we would have liked the former palace spokesman, Elisa Anderson, tells People in this week's issue. No fuss, no bother, right through his life, he never knew what all the fuss was. All four of Prince Philip and Queen Elizabeth's children, Prince Charles, Princess Anne, Prince Andrew, and Prince Edward, are in attendance, along with Charles' wife, Camilla, Anne's husband, also Timothy Lawrence, and Edward's wife, Sophie, Countess of Windsor. Philip's great grandchildren are also at the funeral: Prince William's wife, Kate Middleton, Zara Tyndale's husband, Mike, Princess Eugene's husband, Jack Brunsbank, and Princess Beatrice's husband, Eduardo Matilda Musi, had all joined their spouses. Queen Elizabeth had to make some difficult decisions about who could be keeping what with the 30-minute person, a Buckingham Palace said. "We are dealing with a family funeral, and at its heart, it is still a family event," the spokesman said. This story originated at People.com. "We are so happy that the two brothers have come together for a somber moment." For over a year, we've been hearing how we're living through unprecedented times. But when it comes to the Academy Awards being disrupted by a global crisis, 2021 is not a first. The 1942 Oscars were almost canceled altogether, coming on the heels of the attack on Pearl Harbor and the United States' entry into World War II. The Academy feared that a glitzy self-event, very glitzy, might send the wrong message. The Academy Awards has also had to walk a very fine line, says Dave Garber, awards expert and host of Turner Classic Movies, 31 Days of Oscar, and an EW alum. "Because even though there are tens of millions of people who are fascinated by it, it does not honor the best achievements in film. which is one of the country's most important exports. It also does strike a descent portion of the population as being unnecessary. Rich Hollywood elites patting themselves on the back. That exact fear led the Academy to temporarily cancel the awards in 1942 before ultimately deciding to go ahead with a more usual ceremony that acknowledged and honored the current circumstances. As Variety put in a headline at the time, Academy will hold Academy dinner after all, but Nick's finery, hoofing, and glitter. It was Betty Davis who had a hand in pushing the event forward. Then the president of the Academy, she put forth a plan to move the ceremony from a ballroom to an auditorium and to pivot from a celebratory dinner to a live show. She even floated the idea of selling tickets to the public, with proceeds going to the Red Cross. Ultimately, the Academy devised a different plan, but Davis's impact is undeniable. I would like to think that Hollywood heavyweights such as Betty Davis helped turn the tide. Carter tells EW, it also talks about Davis's last work with the war effort as the co-founder of the Hollywood Canteen, a free club offering dancing, food, and entertainment free of charge to U.S. servicemen and women. So, the awards went on, but in a stripped-down fashion. Just as Variety so vividly put it, the tradition of an after-party with dancing was canceled. Women wore plainer dresses and men opted for suits rather than tuxedos. Both presenter Jimmy Stewart and Best Supporting winner Donald Criss were among those serving who wore their military uniforms. As Variety announced, black ties would strictly be optional, with business suits and informal dress. Political Wendell L. Wilkie attended the guest of honor and main speaker, acting as a representative for the Roosevelt administration and calling Hollywood to action in the war effort. The impact of the war was visibly felt at the ceremony, asserted Cogger. But what people were saying is what people were wearing. Now, nearly 80 years later, the Oscar faces a global crisis of a different nature, the coronavirus 19 pandemic. In the decades in between, national crisis, including the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. and the Iraq War, led to postponements, but not talk of cancellation or wide-scale revision of the ceremony's entire approach. 1942 was the closest the Oscars came to being canceled, Carger says. A global war, whether it involves combat or a virus, is the only thing that will put the Academy Award ceremony in jeopardy. The big difference between 1942 and 2021 is that in 1942 it was a question of whether having a ceremony felt right. Well, today we're talking about whether having a ceremony is physically safe. Conversations for the 2021 Oscars have followed a similar situation to those in 1942. At first, as the pandemic raged, many wondered if this could happen at all. The Academy preemptively bumped the ceremony to April as opposed to their standard late February, early March date. Then, as other award shows, such as the Emmys and the Golden Globes, adapted to a virtual format to varying degrees of success, questions have loomed. Would people simply Zoom in from their homes, wearing whatever suited them, echoing the more subtle clothing choices of 1942? Would the ceremony be held with any in-person audience? Would they still be placed at their home for last two decades, Hollywood's Doble Theater? Just as the 14th Academy Awards had to adapt to wartime expectations, now the 93rd must accommodate to our new reality. In 1942, I would imagine that you could have looked both ways. Should we do it or shouldn't we? Muses Carter. But in 2021, it's clear it can't be a typical Oscars. They had to throw all of our traditions and the usual parameters out the window and almost start from scratch. In the 79 years since 1942, nothing approaches the profusity of the coronavirus 19. Answers have trickled in, predominantly via a letter to nominees from Stacey Scher and Jesse Collins. The ceremony will not be virtual, but rather an intimate in-person event at Union Station in Los Angeles, with additional show elements live from the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. Though Betty Davis suggested a change of setting in 1942, the show didn't pivot from its hotel banquet setting until 1944. Though that marked a permanent shift away from the dinner banquet format, this year's locale change seems a 1 week off, a tweak designed to allow for social distancing and other coronavirus 19 precautions. Well, as far as casual dress, in 1942, though, the dress code calls for anything from strictly not casual to formal, if so desire. Whatever that means. Initially, Zoom acceptance speeches were banned, but in response to a backlash, the producers relented, announcing plans for more remote venues in London and elsewhere to honor travel restrictions. At any rate, pivoting due to an outcry seems to be an Academy specialty. Rather, it's 40s or the 2020s. And while the show in 1942 was a stripped-down affair, it seems as if 2021 will opt for a different approach entirely, social distancing themselves, both the old models of banquet and traditional televised award shows. Instead, the producers have declared their intention for the show to almost look like a movie, with recent presenter announcements taking the form of film credits. Well, we'll have to wait until April 25th to find out exactly how that approach happens. One other big question remains: is the events of last year influence who wins? In 1942, Gary Cooper won Best Actor for playing a military hero, and in famously How Green Was My Valet, beat out of Citizen Kane for Best Picture. I don't think it's a coincidence that in that year, right after the entered the war, that we would see someone like Gary Cooper winning Best Actor for Sergeant York, Ed's Carger, or a movie like How Green Was My Value. We'll just have to wait and see. 2021 crop of nominees don't directly address the pandemic, but they do reflect themes that speak to our current moment, particularly in their engagement with issues of civil rights and social justice. Krager sees ties between frontrunner No Man's Land and our circumstances in a movie that really embraces the idea of living more simply without as many material things. And I do think this is something many of us has been thinking about over the last year, he reflects. I don't think there would be reason for No Man's Land wins, but it could be an interesting parallel. Whether it's 1942 or 2021, one thing remains true. The Oscars will always have to evolve with the times and rise to meet the challenges of our global circumstances. We will look forward to seeing what happens on April 25th. Thank you for listening to this story. Fresh off of Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar, Kristen Will and Annie Maloney are ready to tackle another duo. EW confirms that the Oscar-nominated Bridesmaids writers are working with Disney on a script for a live-action film centering on Cinderella's evil stepsisters, as first reported by Dateline. While it is still unclear whether or not they'll appear in the film, the stepsisters themselves are said to be played by younger actresses. There's no word yet whether how it will be connected to the project in the early stages of development. Is to live-action Cinderella, the studio released in 2015. In that film, the soon-to-be princess Wicked step-siblings Anastasia and Grizzly Tremaine were played by actresses Holiday Grainger and Sophie Michera, respectively. The new movie apparently seeks to tell the story of those characters from early childhood through the fairy tale ending of Cinderella. It is akin to the villain origin stories Disney has been making lately with films like Maleficent and Cruella. EW has reached out to representatives for Disney and Wilk and Mulaney for comment. Should be fun. Well, my friends, that's about all for now. I want to wish everyone a happy and safe week. I know the weather is a little chilly, but we all know that spring is right around the corner. Have a great week, and this has been Betsy from EW. Thank you. I'll look forward to talking to you again next Monday. Bye-bye.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
This is a Recording Library of West Texas Community Update.
Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will present Take 3 at 7:30 p.m. May 1st at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center, 1310 North FM 1788 in Midland. Take 3, joined by the Midland Odessa Symphony Orchestra and conductor Gary Lewis, will present a high-energy performance highlighting the powerhouse trio of musicians, including a violinist, cellist, and pianist. Masks are required, and seating for this event will be socially distant and limited. Tickets are $30 to $50. Students are $17. For tickets, visit mosc.org or call 800-514-3849 or stop by the Wagner Noel box office.
This week on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio's Saturday Night Movie, we continue our series of Oscar-winning films. For the last several weeks, we've selected one audio-described movie from each decade leading up to this year's Academy Awards broadcast on April 25th. Saturday, we present the 2012 film awarded Best Picture, Argo. This historical drama was directed by, produced by, and starred Ben Affleck. It also starred Bryan Cranston, Alan Arkin, and John Goodman. In addition to Best Picture, it also earned Best Adapted Screenplay and Best Film Editing honors. In all, Argo received 7 Academy Award nominations.
Actions of Iran have shocked the civilized world.
Go! Get everything!
Our embassy has been seized and more than 60 American citizens continue to be held as hostages.
If we're going to go, then we need to go now.
What happened?
The 6 of the hostages went out a back exit.
Where are they? The Canadian ambassador's house.
You got Revolutionary Guards going door to door. These people die. They die badly.
White House?
Who wants the 6 of them out?
What we like for this are bicycles.
Deliver the 6 bikes, provide them with maps.
Or you could just send in training wheels and meet them at the border with Gatorade.
It's gonna take a miracle to get them out.
Hey, man. What are we watching?
I got an idea.
They're a Canadian film crew for a science fiction movie.
I fly into Tehran. We all fly out together as a film crew.
I need you to help me make a fake movie.
So you want to come to Hollywood and act like a big shot without actually doing anything?
Yeah.
You'll fit right in.
We need a
script?
Argo, science fantasy adventure.
Moonscape, Mars, desert.
They need an exotic location to shoot.
You need a producer.
If I'm doing a fake movie, it's going to be a fake hit.
You don't have a better bad idea than this?
This is the best bad idea we have, sir. By far.
You have 72 hours to get them out.
They're getting a visitor.
Have you gotten people out this way before?
No.
They're asking us to trust you with our lives.
This is what I do, and I've never left anyone behind.
They know who they are, and they know they're hiding out.
It's over, Tony.
If they stay here, they will be taken. Probably not alive.
We're responsible for these people.
You really believe your little story is going to make a difference when there's a gun to our heads?
I think my little story is the only thing between you and a gun to your head.
The 2012 winner for Best Picture, Argo, audio described, Saturday night at 7 on Recording Library of West Texas Radio.
To bring us up to time for our next regularly scheduled program, we now bring you the following informative feature.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Breakfast bread induces half-day snooze fest. Dear Dr. Roach, why do I feel sleepy for almost half the day whenever I have bread for breakfast? This only happens when I take bread. I'm an 18-year-old female. A.B. Answer. There are several reasons. Bread is made up mostly of starch, which in turn is composed of long strands of sugar molecules linked together. Your body breaks these down quickly into sugar. Some breads are made of whole grain, which contains fiber and protein. These somewhat slow down the absorption of starch. Other breads are highly processed and raise blood sugar levels as quickly as if you were consuming pure sugar. As the body responds to this sugar load with insulin, the blood sugar level comes down quickly, and for many people that is associated with fatigue. Any food will tend to switch the body from a sympathetic state, often called fight or flight, to a parasympathetic state of rest and digest. This also will tend to make a person relaxed and sleepy.
The long and winding road that leads to your door will never disappear. I've seen that road before. It always leads me here. Lead me to your door. The wild and windy night that the rain washed away. Has left a pool of tears crying for the day. Why leave me standing here? Let me know. You time ago.